Good morning, and welcome to the Angels Program. This is your volunteer broadcast, Ruth Sanchez, bringing you this week's Angels Program. Today I'm reading from the book, The Best Angels Stories, 2015. My Blue Angel, written by Katie Bailey Randolph. Bluebirds were always a source of joy for my husband Pete and me. We loved to watch them in our yard building their nest in the many bluebird boxes Pete had built to accommodate them. But after Pete's death from heart failure, I had no interest in bluebirds or anything else. I was all alone and my loneliness consumed me. "Come and look at this," my daughter called from the kitchen a few days after the funeral. "Come see this silly bluebird." I stayed on the couch. The yard was full of birds in August. What could be so special about this one? Christy came to me in the living room. "Mom, there's just something about this bird you have to see." I followed her to the kitchen, expecting to see a bluebird perched on one of the boxes or maybe the bird bath. Instead, I found him on the screen itself. He turned his bright blue head this way and that, peering into the house as if he was looking for somebody. "Have you ever seen a bluebird do that?" Christia said. "I've never seen this one, so big," I said. "He wouldn't even fit in a bluebird box." With his peach-colored chest puffed out proudly, he reminded me of Pete himself. The bird flew to the banister of the porch, then back to the screen door. One, two, three times. Then he flew up to the flagpole beside the bird bath and just sat. Pete would have loved him, I thought. It was strange to be watching the bird without him. Pete and I had been inseparable since we got married in 1958. We spent even more time together after our retirement, sitting on the porch, cooking dinner, working on craft projects. Now, what did I have left? Christy fixed lunch, but I couldn't eat. I could hardly look at the kitchen table, the place where Pete and I had shared our morning prayer each day. I went back to the couch. Before I knew it, Christy was calling me again. "Now he's out by the garage," she said. Before I knew it, there he was. Her husband Keith had backed Pete's pickup into the driveway while he swept out the garage. The bluebird perched on the truck's open window, looking at the front seat as if seeing someone there. He flew inside to the back seat, then to the front, then flew to the window of Pete's workshop. "It's like he's visiting all the places that belong to Dad," Christy said. "Strange coincidence," I said. "Those places reminded me of my husband. But whatever the bird's reasons for sitting in those places, they had nothing to do with my husband." By the time I went to sleep that night, I had forgotten all about the bird. So I had no idea what was banging on the screen the next morning until I was face to face with him. Once again, he flew to the porch banister and back three times. Then he took his spot on the flagpole. For the rest of the summer and well into the fall, the bird was a daily visitor. Every morning he greeted me at the screen door. Every afternoon he sat on the flagpole. Somehow his presence made me feel less alone. Pete's empty chair at the table, but at least my bluebird was watching over me. He gave me something to look forward to every morning and something happy to talk about with his friends and family. "What do you call him?" my niece asked me. "I just call him my blue angel," I said. "God used a raven and a dove to speak to Noah. Why couldn't he have sent a bluebird to comfort me?" One day in December, I caught myself looking in the mirror. Months of avoiding the kitchen table had left me thin and tired looking. Even my hair looked scraggly. It was time for me to start taking care of myself. I made an appointment with my hairdresser, Ritha. It was a trek to the salon, but I had been with her a long time. I need a cut and a perm, I told her when I sat down in the chair. Ritha tied a smock around me and stopped. What's that? She pointed out the door of the salon to the street. Something round and blue was perched on Ritha's SUV outside. It was my bluebird. There was no mistaking him at that size. He stayed on the SUV throughout my entire appointment and was back home to greet me the next morning as usual. As I got stronger, my bluebird took some time off. Sometimes he didn't visit for a couple of days at a time, but he was there when I needed him, like on Valentine's Day when he surprised me at my bedroom window. One challenge still remained, the breakfast table. I still hadn't so much as pulled out a chair. Today's the day, I thought as I got up one morning. I made a cup of coffee and took a seat opposite Pete's empty place. Instinctively, I stretched my hand across the table, reaching for Pete's hand to say the morning blessing. All my months of progress vanished. I was alone again, and the pain overwhelmed me. How could you take him from me? I yelled to the empty kitchen. Why isn't Pete here with me? I pounded the table and cried, barely aware of where I was and what I was doing. All I knew was how much I hurt. Then something caught my attention. Something banging on the storm door. I opened my eyes to see my bluebird knocking just as he had done that first day. His bright peach chest rising and falling as if he had flown to me in a rush, his little heart beating under his feathers. I'm here, he seemed to say. You are not alone. I'm here. I'm not alone, I thought. I had my blue angel. What was more, I had God. Later that spring, my bluebird visited me for the last time, but his message remained safe in my heart. I am never alone. The Mangy Angel, written by Esther Voigt. Cold March showers pelted my face as I stepped from the warmth of the church and threaded my way across the lot toward the parsonage. Thursday evening's meeting of the Women's Missionary Society had finally closed, and as the pastor's wife, I was the last to leave. My husband had gone to a general conference in Detroit, and the children and I were alone. I half expected to find the parsonage cloaked with night, for the hour was late and the children should have been in bed hours ago. Letting myself in quietly, I was surprised to find the kitchen light still burning. Ted, our oldest, his dark head bent over his books, was studying at the table. He looked up as I came in. Hello, Mom. Wet out, isn't it? It's a wild night, all right, I said wryly, peeling off my dripping coat and boots. He went back to his homework. As I turned to leave the kitchen, I looked down. Then I gasped. Our huge, mangy dog laid stretched out at Ted's side. Ted, what's Brownie doing in the house? I demanded. You know he's never stayed inside before. Ted glanced up from his book and shrugged. Why, he just wanted in, so I let him in. Then I decided I might as well bring my homework down here. Brownie wanted in? That in itself was utterly crazy. For that moment, so was everything else about that dog. Black, brown, and smelly, and of undetermined breed, he had wandered to the parsonage one day and simply decided to stay. He adopted our family and was fiercely protective of us in every way. In fact, he loved us so much that he wanted to be where we were. Yet, once we had let him into the house, he developed a peculiar claustrophobic streak. He would race in terror from window to window until we had let him out. No amount of bribing or petting could persuade Brownie to remain indoors, Even the dreary drip-drip of rain from the eaves failed to lure him inside. He preferred the most inclement outdoor weather to being enclosed, until now. There he was, lying calmly beside Ted in the kitchen like a very ordinary house dog. I remembered his previous fierce possessiveness of us, our large red brick parsonage sprawled comfortably on a big grassy plot behind the church and opposite the public school. Children often cut across the church property and through our yard when hurrying to and from school. We didn't mind. In fact, they were our friends. Against our better judgment, we often had report cards thrust at us even before parents saw them. That is, until the dog came. His growled, threatening at anyone who dared cross our yard. Yet Brownie always came when I called him off. Still, with people dropping in on our parsonage at all hours of the day, I was afraid someday I wouldn't get him called off in time. I tried desperately to find another home for him, but without success. Once I even called the Humane Society. "Sure, lady," they said, "we'll get him, but you got to catch him and shut him up for us." Shut Brownie up? Impossible. One might as well try to imprison a victim of claustrophobia in an elevator. Until a better solution presented itself, he would have to remain with us. And that's how things stood that wild, stormy night I came home from church. Shaking my head at Brownie's strange behavior, I went down to the basement to bolt the door that leads to the outside. I came back up directly and retired to the living room with the paper. Ted already had gone up to bed, and I decided to turn in too. The dog still lay on the kitchen floor, his shaggy head resting on his front paws. Better put Brownie out first, I thought, as I entered the kitchen to lock the back door. Rain still drummed steadily against the windows. But when I tried to get the dog out of the door, he refused to budge. I wheedled, I coaxed, I pushed and pulled. He remained stationary. Going to the refrigerator, I took out a chunk of meat and tried to bribe him to the door by dangling it in front of him. He still refused to move. With a bewildered sigh, I picked up his hind end, yanked him toward the door and out of it. Like quicksilver, his front end slid back in. I grabbed his front end and the back was in. His 4 feet seemed like a baker's dozen. Stubborn, determined, yet somehow placid. Talk about Balaam's donkey. I knew exactly how Balaam felt. Should I call Ted to help me? No, the hour was late and Ted needed his sleep. I decided to shut all the doors to the kitchen and leave the dog inside. Then I went wearily to bed. The next morning, the dog reverted to his true nature and frantically tore out of the house. A puzzled frown ribbed my forehead as I went down to the basement to turn on the furnace. What had made Brownie behave so strangely? Why had he had been determined to remain in the house this one night? I shook my head. There seemed to be no answer. When I reached the bottom of the stairs, I felt a breath of cold, damp air. Then a queer, slimy feeling swept over me. The outside door was open. Was someone in the basement? After the first wave of panic had drained from me, my reasoning returned. Someone had gone out of the basement. Limp with the reality of that fact, I looked around. The windows were as snug and tight on the inside as ever. Whoever had gone out of that door had been in when I had gone down to bolt it the night before. He apparently had heard my unsuccessful attempts to put the dog out and knew he had to come up through the kitchen and face the dog or go out the door he had come in earlier. That smelly stray pooch had known this, and God had used him to keep us safe. Why didn't he growl or bark? I don't know. Maybe he knew he didn't have to. I had always believed that God had definite work for his holy angels, and that as his child, I could lay claim to the verse in Hebrews 1:14. Are they angels, not all ministering spirits, sent forth to minister for them who shall be heirs of salvation? But his ministering spirit had taken a peculiar form that wild, stormy night. Instead of glorious, dazzling wings, the Lord had given our guardian angel 4 stubborn, mangy feet. You can listen to this and most other Sunsound programs at your convenience with On Demand. Go to sunsounds.org and click Broadcast Info and Audio. Rescue Psalm 91, written by Duane Parrish. Oklahoma was my new home now that I was retired from my pastoral work. But as my wife Anne and I watched the news one night, I felt more like we were living in Egypt during the time of the 10 plagues. Another hailstorm, I groaned when we saw the warning scroll by at the bottom of the TV screen. Oh no, Anne said. I looked up sadly, thinking of our roof. Just that afternoon, I had admired it gleaming in the sun. It ought to gleam. It was practically brand new. Our third new roof in 4 years, in fact. Each one had been destroyed by brutal Oklahoma hail driven by raging wind. Chunks of ice the size of golf balls had dinged the shingles, smashed the vents, and destroyed the guttering. Not again, I thought, please. A hailstorm is on its way toward Oklahoma City, the weatherman confirmed. According to the weather map, we had 45 minutes until it was right on top of us. There was nothing more we could do to prepare. We had already brought the strongest roof we could find. Once that was in place, I had anointed the home with oil and prayed over the whole perimeter of our property, asking God to send angels to protect it. I watched the rest of the news and checked the clock. 30 minutes to go before our new roof and my prayers would be put to rest. I flipped to another TV station, hoping to hear that the storm had changed direction, but it was bearing down ever closer. 20 minutes. 10. It was time to bring out the big guns. I'm going to pray Psalm 91, I told Anne. I stepped outside the front door. Heavy gray clouds filled the night sky to the northwest. I could already hear the hail coming, hitting everything in its path. I recited from memory. I dwell in the secret place of the Most High and abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I say of the Lord, you are my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. The storm advanced like an invading army, the clouds rolling across the sky above our heads. Hail pelted the roof. Anne walked out to stand with me. You will deliver us from the snare of the fowler and the deadly pestilence. I imagined the angel of the Lord spreading his wings out over our property. That would protect us for sure. You will cover us with your feathers, and under your wings shall we trust. But now I was practically shouting over the storm. The sky was so dark I could barely see anything very clearly. But out in the yard, something dropped from that sky. Not hail, birds. Great big birds, gray and white, with black heads and wingspans 3 feet across. I've never seen such a bird, Anne said. Nor had I. A whole flock descended on our lawn, perhaps 100 or more. The birds landed on the grass, covering every inch. They tucked their heads under their wings for cover. The hail stopped. The storm moved off. The world went quiet. The birds untucked their heads from their wings. Together they flew off into the sky. Anne and I went back inside. we decided that tomorrow would be soon enough to assess the damage. The next morning dawned bright and sunny. "Let's do this together," Anne said. We stepped into the yard. "I don't believe it," I said. Our roof gleamed in the sun, looking brand new, not a ding or a missing shingle. The gutters were sound. Even the vegetable garden was untouched. I could see I had been giving out the number of our roofer to my neighbors. And I had a very good book I'd highly recommend as well. You're tuned to Sun Sounds. Making the Rounds, written by Peggy Friesen. I huddled in the vinyl chair near the foot of the hospital bed. That man lying there pale and still, monitors blinking all around him, oxygen tubes clamped to his nose. I barely recognized him. How could that be Mike, the husband I relied on for 31 years? My take-charge guy was battling multiple blood clots in his lungs that had debilitated his body. The doctor said the worst was over. Now we just had to be patient. But I had made myself sick with worry, spending my days at the hospital and night after night of sleeplessness at home, scared and completely on my own. For the first time in my life, I had no one to depend on. We were one of those couples who did everything together. At breakfast, we did the daily crossword puzzle, sharing a pen. We went together to the gym, where we climbed aboard adjacent treadmill machines, plugged in our earbuds, and watched the same show on TV. When Mike tapped me on the shoulder and pointed to the screen, I always knew exactly what he was thinking. Mike was my rock. Lord, please help him get better. I feel all alone without him. A strange sound came from the hospital corridor. A sharp click, 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 click on the linoleum floor drew nearer till it stopped outside Mike's room. I did a double take. A dog loomed in the doorway. I recognized the breed by his distinctive black and white coat, highlighted by rust-colored markings. A Bernese Mountain Dog. The special collar distinguished him as a therapy dog. I gazed at Mike, awake but dazed. I had been a dog lover all my life, but what could a therapy dog possibly do to help my husband? The dog seemed to read my thoughts. He had a job to do, and he got to it. Purposefully, he stepped into the room, handler in tow. I sat quietly, watching this well-trained beauty. Maybe petting the dog's soft fur will give Mike some small comfort. As the dog headed towards Mike's bedside, he suddenly stopped. He padded over to my chair and looked into my eyes. With that, the dog nudged his head against my waist, as if asking for a hug. I put my arms around him and buried my face into his thick, velvety fur till I felt the gentle pulsing of his heart. "I am here," its rhythm seemed to say. My whole body relaxed. My stress lifted away. Mike smiled from the bed. The dog let me hold him for as long as I needed to. When I finally released him, he put his paw on my knee and looked up at me. I turned to his handler. How did he know that I was the one who needed him?
"Gabriel always knows," she said.
I stroked the dog's neck.
"Gabriel, my angel dog.
The Lord knew how to soothe me. He'd keep me strong while my husband regained his health. On that I could depend on."
This is Sun Sounds. One of a Kind Cat, written by Patty Darnesque. Girly must be the one cat you are not allergic to, my husband Jim said. It didn't make any sense. I had agreed to keep a friend's cat for 3 weeks, knowing I was highly allergic. I figured I'd just add allergy pills to my daily medical regimen since I was already managing type 1 diabetes. But a week had passed and I hadn't taken one allergy pill. Even with Girlie curled up on our bed at night, none of my usual symptoms had shown up. "What is it about you?" I asked her one night when I climbed in bed. Later, I woke up to Jim's gentle shakes. "We have to check your blood sugar," he was saying. The sheets were wet. I was covered in sweat. My blood sugar was dangerously low, life-threatening. Jim gave me a shot to raise it quickly. "I would have slept through the crisis if Girlie hadn't batted me in the face with her paws," Jim said. Girlie never went back to my friend's house. She curls up with me every night like a guardian angel watching over me. And of course, no one is allergic to angels. We are at the close of this week's Angels program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Ruth Sanchez. Thank you for tuning in this week, and I invite you to join us next Sunday for another new and informative program. Have a wonderful Sunday, and stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.